The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going deep into, well, a really intense period in recent history, the 2008 global financial crisis.
That's right. We're looking at it through the eyes of someone right in the middle of it all. Timothy Geithner, specifically his memoir, Stress Test, Managing Financial Crises.
And this isn't just, you know, dry financial analysis. It's really about leadership when everything's falling apart.
Absolutely. Geithner was right there at the epicenter. And his book is a pretty candid defense of some really controversial, really unpopular decisions. Decisions made, he argues, to stop things from getting even worse, like Great Depression worse.
That really is the core issue, isn't it? The central question. When the entire financial system is, like, collapsing.
The banks, the markets.
Everything.
Yeah, the whole plumbing. What are officials supposed to do? Mm-hmm. And why does the answer often these big bailouts feel so, well, unfair to a lot of people? Exactly. We're basically looking at the blueprint he offers for trying to manage that kind of systemic failure. It's messy stuff.
And to really get why his viewpoint matters, you have to look at where he was coming from. His background is key here.
Totally. This isn't some academic looking mm-hmm. back years later. This is the guy who had to make the calls, you know. Operational insight.
Let's break that down. So Geithner was president of the New York Fed, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, from 2003 to 2009.
Right. And that job means you're the Fed's main contact point with Wall Street, with the big markets. So he saw the bubble building up close.
And then, boom, right as the crisis hits its peak, he becomes Treasury Secretary under President Obama, stays there till 2013.
So he didn't just walk into the aftermath. He was there designing and crucially implementing the response.
Well, what I think is really fascinating and maybe less known is his earlier experience. He wasn't just a U.S. domestic guy.
No, not at all. He'd spent years before that working internationally with the IMF, dealing with crises in emerging markets back in the 90s.
Like the Mexican peso crisis, the Asian financial crisis.
And that experience dealing with system-wide meltdowns elsewhere gave him this comparative perspective that was probably invaluable. He'd seen what total collapse looked like, not just in theory, but for real.
So it's that mix, the technical finance know-how, the international crisis experience, and then being the one personally responsible under insane pressure.
That's what gives the book Stress Test its, well, its weight, its credibility.
And it all feeds into his main argument, doesn't it? That when you're in that kind of crisis, effective management means you have to be bold, decisive.
And willing to make decisions that are politically toxic. Mm-hmm. Because the priority has to be stabilizing the whole system, even if it goes against popular feeling or, you know, what feels morally right in the moment.
He basically says, look, the goal isn't making everyone happy or ensuring perfect fairness right then and there.
No, it's about keeping the economy from completely seizing up. The steps you need to take are often things people hate, but they might be economically vital.
He lays out these like three critical elements for managing a crisis, almost painful elements, really. First one is speed.
Yeah, gotta act fast, even if you don't have all the information. He says, if you wait for perfect clarity for all the committees to agree,
the panic has already run away from you. It wins.
Second point, you have to be ready to take the political heat. Policies like injecting cash into failing banks.
Guaranteed public backlash. Huge anger.
And leaders just have to wear that. Absorb the cost.
And the third one, this is maybe the toughest pill to swallow. Sometimes you actually have to prop up the very institutions that helped cause the mess.
Right. Why?
Yeah.
Because letting them just implode could drag everything else down with them, causing way more damage to ordinary people. It's a horrible trade-off.
It really is. And that's why the book is, I think, so gripping. It's part memoir of navigating chaos, part instruction manual for future crises.
Definitely. It's about how you stabilize this incredibly complex, interconnected system when politics is screaming at you from all sides.
Okay. Let's walk through the timeline a bit, because Geithner connects his early lessons to the 2008 response, those 90s crises, his baptism by fire.
Yeah, he says they taught him something absolutely fundamental. Financial crises aren't just about solvency, whether a company has enough assets long term. They're really about confidence and liquidity.
That distinction is huge, isn't it?
Massive.
Yeah.
It means a bank could be perfectly solvent on paper, you know, assets greater than debts eventually. But if everyone suddenly loses faith today and demands their money back now,
it collapses because it doesn't have the ready cash, the liquidity.
Exactly. And that loss of confidence spreads like wildfire.
Yeah.
Panic. That's why he says hesitating is the worst thing you can do. Fatal.
Right. Okay, so that's the backdrop. Then comes the U.S. crisis, what he calls the gathering storm. And Geithner's pretty clear. Warning signs were missed, not just subprime mortgages, but this whole hidden expansion of the financial world.
Yes, specifically the shadow banking system. All these non-bank players, investment banks, hedge funds, you name it, operating outside the old rules.
Taking on enormous risks, huge leverage.
And dealing in these incredibly complicated financial instruments.
Mm.
Stuff that was creating this massive hidden pool of risk that regulators didn't fully grasp.
Instruments like mortgage-backed securities, credit default swaps, CDS. Geithner admits, yeah, policymakers struggled to really understand them until it was almost too late.
And then the dam breaks. March 2008. Bear Stearns is about to go under.
Geithner calls this the first messy rescue. The Fed steps in, backs a takeover by JP Morgan Chase.
And it worked, sort of. It calmed the markets for a bit, but it immediately set this precedent that people hated. The government saving big, potentially reckless firms, protecting shareholders, creditors.
People who arguably should have lost their shirts. That precedent created enormous anger.
Which brings us to that absolutely pivotal moment, September 2008. The contrast between Lehman Brothers failing and AIG being rescued.
So, Lehman, Geithner's take is, look, legally, they just didn't have the authority to save it.
They tried to find a buyer, apparently, but nobody would touch it without government guarantees, and the Treasury just wasn't empowered by law to give those at that specific moment.
So Lehman fails, and the impact is immediate. Global panic kicks into high gear.
Yeah, the Lehman failure proved the fear was real. If one massive interconnected firm could just collapse like that.
The whole system felt fragile. And that context, that sudden terror, made the decision about AIG basically unavoidable.
Totally unavoidable. AIG was described as a ticking time bomb. Its failure wouldn't have been just another bank failure.
Why not? What made AIG so different?
Because AIG was the main seller of credit default swaps globally. Think of them like insurance policies on bonds. If AIG went bankrupt, all those insurance policies held by banks everywhere, US, Europe, Asia, would become worthless overnight.
Forcing banks across the world to instantly recognize massive, catastrophic losses.
It would have been, as someone put it, an extinction-level event for the global financial system. Complete meltdown.
So saving AIG, even though politically it looked terrible, like, rewarding recklessness was seen as absolutely essential to prevent total global collapse.
Right. And that moment, that AIG crisis, really convinced Geithner and others that just dealing with firms one by one wasn't going to cut it.
That's the shift, then, towards a systemic approach. Which brings us to TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program.
Yeah, TARP. Geithner explains how that strategy changed pretty fast. Initially, the idea was maybe buying up toxic assets from banks.
But that was complicated, slow.
Exactly. So they pivoted quickly to directly injecting capital into the banks, just shoring up their balance sheets to restore confidence.
But the real innovation, the policy that gives the book its title, was the stress tests in 2009, the Supervisory Capital Assessment Program.
Yes, the stress tests. This was clever. It wasn't just another bailout. It was designed as an exercise in forced transparency.
What does that mean? Forced transparency?
Basically, the government made the biggest banks reveal their potential losses under a really bad hypothetical economic scenario, a stress scenario.
And then publicly announced exactly how much extra capital each bank needed to raise to survive that scenario.
Right. It did two things. It forced the weaker banks to go out and raise private money, strengthening themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more importantly, it showed the public, the markets, that the government had looked under the hood.
Knew how bad things were.
And had a plan to make sure the core system was sound. It was about breaking that cycle of fear and rumor with cold, hard numbers.
And it worked.
Largely, yes. It helped restore confidence that the major banks weren't all going to fail. It was a psychological turning point, stopping the panic.
It's a really interesting example of using technical policy to manage, essentially, fear.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which leads us nicely into the big themes, the core lessons Geithner draws from all this.
Okay, first big lesson, that speed-accuracy trade-off. He really hammers this home.
He does. In a panic, doing something imperfectly but quickly is way less risky than waiting to get everything perfectly right but acting too slowly.
Like, plan B executed now is better than waiting for plan A consensus later.
Exactly. Momentum and perception are critical in a crisis.
Okay.
That applies way beyond finance, right? Any leadership situation under pressure.
Okay. Theme two, the moral hazard paradox. This is the tough one we touched on. Protecting the arsonists, the firms that caused the fire. How does he square that circle ethically?
Well, he confronts it directly. He argues that the immediate, understandable desire to punish the culprits, it has to take a backseat to the greater need.
The need to prevent widespread economic devastation for millions of innocent people, homeowners, workers, retirees.
Precisely. He basically says letting the system collapse just to teach Wall Street a lesson would be an incredibly cruel policy choice for everyone else. It's pragmatic, maybe grimly so.
It's a stark argument. And the final theme ties into that, the sheer difficulty of the politics of crisis response. He calls it fighting a war on two fronts.
Yeah. On one side, you're battling the economic chaos itself. On the other, you're battling this intense political and public anger about the solutions you have to use.
Because the best technical fix, like stabilizing banks, might be the hardest thing to sell politically, especially when ordinary people are losing their homes.
That conflict is brutal. The pressure to punish clashes directly with the economic need to stabilize, makes communicating what you're doing almost impossible.
Having lived through that furnace, Geithner has some pretty memorable lines that capture the reality of it. We should look at a few.
Definitely. The first one really nails the political danger. In a financial crisis, political constraints can become suicide pacts.
Wow. Meaning if public anger blocks necessary, even if unpopular, actions like bailouts.
The system can actually collapse, hurting the very people the politicians claim to be championing.
Powerful. Okay, another one, reflecting that need for action. Plan beats no plan, even when the plan is wrong.
It's about leadership again, isn't it? Showing decisiveness. Even an imperfect strategy gives markets, gives people something to hold on to, some sense that someone is in charge, better than paralysis.
Right. Markets need to see a coherent approach and the will to follow through. And maybe the most poignant quote about the thankless nature of the job.
The politics of crisis response are particularly brutal because the benefits of preventing disaster are invisible.
That hits hard. You succeed by stopping the terrible thing from happening.
But people can't see the depression that didn't occur. So how do you justify the huge costs, the unpopular steps you took to avoid it? It's almost impossible.
So, okay, these are powerful lessons from an extreme situation. How can we, you know, apply these ideas outside Wall Street or Washington?
Well, think about crisis leadership in any organization. Geithner's point about the speed accuracy trade-off applies if your company faces, say, a massive IT failure or a sudden market disruption.
You have to decide when to act, even with incomplete information, before you lose customer confidence or market position entirely.
Exactly. And his emphasis on systemic risk is relevant everywhere now. The idea that one failure can cascade.
That applies to supply chains, right? Or complex IT networks, even community planning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You need to understand how interconnected things are and stress test the whole system, not just the individual parts. Look for those hidden dependencies.
And on a personal level, personal finance.
Well, the core idea that crises are driven by confidence or the loss of it really underlines the importance of liquidity, having accessible funds.
So you're not forced to sell assets at the worst possible time just because you're over-leveraged or don't have cash reserves, weathering the storm.
Precisely. Avoiding excessive leverage yourself.
Okay, final thoughts. What was the most surprising thing or the biggest takeaway for you from revisiting this?
For me, honestly, it was the human dimension. We talk about these huge sums of money, abstract policies. But Geithner really conveys the sheer psychological burden.
The exhaustion, the constant public attacks.
Yeah, and just knowing that millions of jobs, people's savings, depended on decisions made in these frantic late-night meetings. It makes you realize crisis leadership isn't some detached academic exercise. Really? It's incredibly personal and draining.
What stood out for me was digging into that specific difference between Lehman and AIG. The fact that for Lehman, the legal authority just wasn't there at that exact moment.
Right. It wasn't necessarily a preferred choice to let it fail, but maybe an unavoidable one given the existing laws.
It just highlights that even in moments of immense crisis, decision makers are still operating within real world constraints, legal, political, practical. It's not absolute power.
Definitely. And ultimately, I think stress test is this really stark, maybe uncomfortable, but necessary defense of pragmatism.
Pragmatism over what? Moral purity. When the whole system's at stake.
Exactly. It's a warning, really. Future policymakers need the tools, the authority, and crucially, the courage to act decisively, even when it's deeply unpopular, to protect the wider economy.
A challenging message, but a vital one to understand. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.